it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Hour two of Graybar Sports Open Line this evening. Nate Gatterbeck with you in for Matt Pauley. And as promised, we're going to be talking Cardinals in this second hour, starting with discussion of former Cardinals and now former Padres manager Mike Schilt, who retired at the end of the Padres season when they fell in the wild card series to the Chicago Cubs. And more interestingly, a story this week that I don't know if you call it a bombshell, maybe that sensationalizes things, but certainly I think it's reverberated around San Diego and St. Louis on some of the frictions that existed for Mike Schilt and his 2 years in San Diego, and that contributed to his surprising exit as well a few years ago as Cardinals manager in St. Louis. That story came from Kevin Acey in the San Diego Union Tribune, and Kevin is kind enough to join us this evening on Sports Open Line. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, yeah.
Been a busy week for you, busy couple of days since the story came out. Let's start with what a lot of folks are probably wondering around St. Louis, which is how is it that in a matter of days after the Padres season and Mike Schilt's retirement came down, you have this incredibly insightful, well-sourced piece, including half a dozen current and former Cardinals sources who are referenced in it. Meanwhile, for years in St. Louis, all we got was kind of the company line of philosophical differences.
Yeah, I can't speak to that. I'm going to say that this is a story I worked on for, you could say, for more than a year. I mean, when hints first started that, you know, Mike was, you know, maybe not the same all the time, right? And then for sure, most of this season, I was asking around and talking with people and, you know, what I would call reporting the story and, you know, deciding what were the merits of this story? How legitimate was it? Okay, it's legitimate. What are the merits here? Do people, you know, how are people feeling about it affecting their job, affecting the team? The team continues to win. Coaches are saying, you know, I'm just focused on now, but they've described certain behaviors. And, you know, the time became when Mike retired and there were questions about, and there still might be questions about how it all went down, you know, A, B, C, D, E, and all the steps. But I felt like that was the time and that was the real story. And it was important to talk to Mike about it. And I did that. Why it didn't happen in St. Louis. Look, I've had stories where later, someplace, some other time, people talk for whatever reasons. But I can't speak to why it came out there. I will say that as I was, reporting this over the past 6 months, I was looking and seeing if there had been anything and asking around. And I guess I was a little surprised. But again, I've been there.
Well, Kevin, we appreciate the level of depth of the reporting here. As you said, I mean, it reads like a story that you poured over a year into, steadily getting that reporting to where it needed to be to put together something as comprehensive as this. To go back to kind of the Cardinals tie-in, you do mention some of the quotes that Schilt had at the beginning of his time as an advisor with the Padres, spring training 2022, yeah, which was just a few months after he had been fired by the Cardinals, and he was characterizing it as potentially caring too much in the way that he was trying to hold various folks accountable, including maybe people in departments that he didn't really run and didn't have autonomy over. And he was talking about the fine line and how he intended to not push as hard if he got another opportunity to manage, which of course came a couple of years later with the Padres. Do you think, based on the reporting you've done and kind of comparing and contrasting his exits in San Diego and St. Louis, that the Padres' Mike Schilt was, in the end, largely the same as Cardinals' Mike Schilt? Or do you think there were changes that he made?
I can't speak to whether there were no changes he made, but the answer to the first part of the question is that he was largely the same Mike Schilt. And that's what stands out to you. And Mike even remarked, and believe me, Mike and I went over what parts, you know, painstakingly almost, what parts of the conversation were on the record and off the record. And Mike said on the record that, yes, it was eerily similar, the things that he was hearing or that were being said. And what does stand out to me, has stood out to me over the course of all of this, Mike does not believe Mike did anything wrong. He did not. I thought it was crucial to the story that Mike didn't refute the substance of what was being said. Mike refuted that there was anything more than him caring too much and having a high standard, and in some cases a higher standard than others were able to live up to. And, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but I mean, there's just a lot there. And Mike's a perfectionist, and Mike's a very good manager. And Mike, you know, I happen to believe, look, Mike and I had our things there. Yeah, we did. If this were personal, this story would have been written a long time ago. But I like Mike, and there's just a lot there. And I think that a lot of people, look, a lot of people don't like him for what would appear to be their own good reasons. But there's a lot of people very conflicted who do like Mike Schilt.
That's kind of sets up something that I was thinking about when I was reading the piece. And I want to be clear, this is my sort of impression, something I'm taking away from it, not something that's written specifically in it. But it made me think of the movie Whiplash, which is kind of all about a teacher. And to be fair, in that instance, a young man that he's teaching, not a professional baseball player or a professional baseball coach. And it's all about how far is too far in the pursuit of greatness. And kind of to your point, which is Schilt saying, sure, I did a lot of this stuff, but I think that was fair, and I think that's within the realm of the job as a major league manager. And even some of the staff members, one coach who you mentioned who, quote, did not appreciate how Schilt treated him, acknowledged he had become a better coach in large part due to Schilt's demands and feedback. That feels to me like everybody agrees on what happened. It's just a question of whether that was too far. Do you think that's a fair way of putting it, that Mike Schilt's vision of how far is too far is just different than what some of the assistants and his support staff thought?
Yes, I think that's fair. And I think that it, you know, I also think there's more to it in that, like, you know, what is one person's too far and another person's? And yeah, I do. And I think we should make clear, too, that none of this is coming from players. Mike took great pains to take care of his players. And Mike did care about his coaches and his players and their careers, and in particular, the players. And so I want to make sure that that's clear, that these are clashes people, and, you know, he talks about not having autonomy for, and there being some frustration there, both St. Louis and San Diego, where the manager doesn't have full control over the training staff, the and other departments. That, but then he also is sort of accountable for those departments to a certain extent. And so Mike's whole aim is excellence. And for him, man, the guy lived the Cardinal way, right? Like, he just lived it. You guys all heard it. We in San Diego heard it for years. He just carried that burden. And other parts of the story talk about that, about Mike Schilt being out and hearing, someone say something like, you know, hey, good job, can't wait for the World Series parade. And the way Mike Schilt hears that is, oh my gosh, these people want me to win the World Series. Is, you know, Mike Schilt has a high, high standard for himself and others.
We're visiting with Kevin Acey of the San Diego Union Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter, X, as at SDUT, Kevin Acey. That's A-C-E-E. SDUT, Kevin Acey, talking about his story on Mike Schilt and the departure in San Diego that you were very clear was on his own terms, that the Padres were, by all accounts, happy to have him back for another year. Do you think... And this, again, this is something where maybe different people would have their own individual answers. But from an organizational standpoint, whether that's ownership, whether it's A.J. Preller and baseball operations, whoever kind of represents the organization in that sense, the Padres feel that the 2 years of Mike Schilt was worthwhile, I suppose, or was it was the right decision to bring him in, even bearing in mind now that there was some acrimony over those 2 years?
Yeah, 183 wins in the 2 years. You go back to 2024, and I know that, you know, if you didn't kind of live it or you weren't watching it, that it's like that it's ifs and buts, right? Don't really matter. But, like, the Padres were up, had two games to win once and eliminate the Dodgers in the National League Division Series, and they did not score in either of those games. And the Dodgers have spoken since then about believing that that's when they won the World Series, when they got past the Padres. The Padres were an excellent team. Mike changed a mindset in a lot of ways. He changed the leadership structure in the clubhouse. He got guys to buy into a certain way of playing and a – what Mike was very proud of, a togetherness. I don't think that really anybody would dispute that. I mean, at one point I referenced in the story that no one questions that the Padres are better off having had Mike Schilt there. And the plan was to bring him back. Now, I will say, I don't think there's a lot of tears among those who had to deal with him on a daily basis that he's gone. But no, and that's the complex nature. Isn't that crazy? The complex nature of Mike Schilt's tenure and his legacy is that no one's really shedding any tears, but they're saying, yeah, we're better for having him.
To that point, you know, last one for you, Kevin Acey of the San Diego Union-Tribune is with us here on Gray Bar Sports Open Line. You've mentioned it already that this was a totally different scenario with the players, right? The way Mike Schilt managed the players as people was totally different than how he managed the coaching staff, the support staff, even to some extent how he treated the people who were maybe not under him, the front office folks, AJ Preller. Just the way those relationships were was very different on the field versus off. What do you think it says about Mike Schilt? What do you think his priorities were in treating the players, who are professionals in their own right, much higher paid than his coaching staff, most of them, in treating the players so differently than his coaching staff and the other support personnel?
I don't know, other than that he was above them. Like, I don't know. And of course, I guess, you know, ostensibly he's above the players, but I think we know in today's modern game where the players stand, and especially some of them, right? You mentioned the money, and, you know, the fact is the more money you make, the less likely it is you're going to be gotten rid of. And there, what, were 10, 15 players on the Padres who made more than Mike Schilt? So I'm just kind of going down your train of thought, and it's an interesting one, man. It really is. It's like, how could that be? And plenty of people talked about how in one part of the clubhouse he would be a certain way, and at times, not all the time, by the way, people enjoyed being around him sometimes. It's not like there's a madman running around. I think anybody who's seen Mike Schilt on camera knows what he's like a lot of the time. Now, of course, if you've seen him on camera, you know what he's like. His press conferences got increasingly testy for absolutely no reason other than that Mike thought that, you know, it was unreasonable to question him. It was very interesting. But I can't answer that other than to say that Mike felt it was the, and I heard this for a long time, almost since he was an advisor and I got to know him fairly well. Mike felt it was his job and the coach's job to make the players better, to further their careers, to get the team to a championship. That's what he felt like the job that he could control was, him and his coaches helping the players. They worked for the players. That's Mike Schilt's philosophy, and that might be as simple as it is.
To that end, I lied. One more quick one. When you say, you know, it's all about making the players better, for anybody who wasn't able to get to read the story, and you should go to the San Diego Union-Tribune and read the story because it is comprehensive, as I said. But for folks who haven't been able to read it, the takeaway was that Mike Schilt is relieved to be walking away from management, doesn't plan to return to it, but that he is open to, if not looking forward to, the possibility down the line of returning to baseball in some kind of player development capacity.
Yes. And I don't think anyone really would question. I don't know that people in the Cardinals, as a matter of fact, I know there's at least some people I've talked to wouldn't question that he's darn good at that job. And that there were some things that changed when he became a manager, but that he is really good at coaching baseball. Yeah, that is what he seems adamant about. I can't stress that enough. It's not like he's just saying it. Now, he may be. Maybe he does want to manage again. I'm not inside another person's head. But I'm telling you, he is vehemently against managing again. But that's, of course, we've all been there, right? He's in the moment right now, and he does not want to manage again.
Well, Kevin, we so appreciate your time and all the work that you poured into this piece. It really shows. Thank you so much for visiting with us tonight on KMOX.
Right on. Take care.
Kevin Acey of the San Diego Union-Tribune. You can follow him at SDUT, Kevin Acey. That's K-E-V-I-N-A-C-E-E. SDUT Kevin Acey joining us to discuss his piece on Mike Schilt's retirement from managing from the San Diego Padres and potentially from baseball, but might still be a return in another capacity. We'll talk more about that. More Cardinals and potential former Cardinals becoming managers later on in this hour. Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina both expressing interest in that as well. That's still to come. Graybar Sports Open Line continues on KMOX after this. I appreciate Kevin Acey having come on with us. If you missed the interview, you can go back and hear it on the free Odyssey.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
App AUDACY. We'd love to get your thoughts on it. You can comment on our streams on Twitter, on Facebook. You can call in as well. As always, you can hit us on the talkback feature on that free Odyssey app. That listener line, by the way, if you forgot, 314-436-7900. You can call in and give us your thoughts. I imagine a lot of people have been thinking over this Mike Schilt story from Kevin Acey over the last couple of days since it came out and have been talking about it. Certainly, we've been talking about it on this these airwaves. And I don't want to belabor that discussion more than necessary. I felt like the opportunity to have the author of the story on was worthwhile. I do want to touch on one other angle that I feel confident we haven't talked about or we haven't talked about enough. And I kind of hinted at it with the first question that I asked Kevin. And understandably, he really is not in a position to go there. It's not his area of expertise, and he probably wouldn't want to even if he knew. Why did we not get this story years ago? How come San Diego gets this story after days, and St. Louis has to get San Diego's sloppy seconds years later? Because one of the themes of the story, which, by the way, if you weren't listening to the interview, includes at least six current and former Cardinal sources. So there were Cardinals folks, at least now, who are willing to talk. Maybe they weren't at the time. Maybe everybody tried and nobody would talk, even off the record. Maybe. I doubt that. But it's possible. There are Cardinals people in this story. There are references of directly addressing what happened in St. Louis. I'm not saying that it's a major focal point. Obviously, San Diego is the major focal point of the story, as it should be, because Kevin has more San Diego sources. He was there on the ground all the way through the 2 years of Schilt. He's writing for a San Diego audience primarily, though I'm sure he knew this story was going to get national traction, and it has very much so. He's been a man in demand. All the more reason we appreciate him making the time for us. He probably knew that after San Diego, St. Louis was going to be the market second most interested. What I want to talk about is why we didn't have this story here. And I hesitate to attribute it to the fact that all of a sudden a bunch of sources who were unwilling to speak for years were willing to speak to Kevin Acey in San Diego. More likely, as I have complained about in one way or another, we have a media environment that is not cutthroat, which is okay. I'm not saying I want to live in a New York media environment, which seems not only toxic, but exhausting. But one that is just too soft a lot of the time. And one that I think isn't always working for the consumer in the way that it should be. The responsibility of media is to the consumers of that media, not to anyone else. Certainly not to protect the St. Louis Cardinals or to protect Mike Schilt or whomever else. And I don't know that Mike Schilt comes out of this story as the total bad guy either. I want to be clear. You know, I think that's one of the reasons that I referenced the movie Whiplash when talking to Kevin Acey, is because I think this, like a lot of scenarios like it, like a lot of great stories of coach and player, of tutor and pupil, of development of people at the direction of another, there's going to be disagreement in society about how heavy is too heavy a hand. right? Think about how many different approaches American parents have with American children on how hard should they be working them in school. You know, how many math problems should you be drilling your seven-year-old on? How soon is too soon to have your kid grinding away in the weight room at 6 a.m.? Right? There, some of this is maybe going to be objective fact. Maybe some of this you could go to the doctors and other experts in psychology or physiology or development, and you could get objective answers. Some of it is going to be subjective. And especially that's true at the very top levels. These are professional athletes, professional baseball coaches, because really we're talking about the coaches and the support staff personnel more than we are the players, because there's no indication. In fact, Kevin is quite adamant in the story and in the interview that none of this is about the players, right? Mike Schilt was, if anything, that's something that I imagine could wear on the coaching staff, is that he's a different guy with them than he is with the players. Mike Schilt's very protective of that relationship with the players and had a very good one. So it's more about professional baseball coaches, but these are people operating at the very top level of their sport in the country and the world. So it's reasonable to say you got to go pretty far before it's too far. A manager, a person in a position of authority at that level can be relatively heavy-handed before it's too far. I don't think it's unreasonable to say that. So none of this is necessarily an attack on Mike Schilt. I think different people are going to draw different conclusions from this. And Mike Schilt, I think, feels that way. He understands that this is not a story that everyone's going to react well to. In fact, plenty of people might react badly to it. But he's not refuting it. I don't know that he's apologizing for it, for that matter. He's saying, I have my methods, right? It's kind of the Michael Jordan documentary, right? There's the moment where he asked them to cut and take a break in the interview because they're talking about how extreme he was, especially in practices. And he says, if you don't want to play that way, don't play that way, right? And you could tell he's taking it a little bit personally, feeling like he's getting attacked for his method and saying, well, I won a lot of games, won a lot of championships. My method's got something to it. If you can't take it, that's not really my problem. That shows that you're not as committed as I am to being great. And that's a defensible position. So I just want to be clear that this is not an attack on Mike Schilt. I'm not saying why wasn't there a hit piece on Mike Schilt, because I don't think this is one. Right? I think this is just an assessment. It's a behind the scenes, and it explains why a successful tenure in San Diego lasted only 2 years, a successful tenure in terms of wins and losses relative to the team that he took over as well, one that was pretty dysfunctional and that had a very unsuccessful 2023. Same thing has kind of happened in St. Louis, where he had three successful seasons and the Cardinals made the playoffs in the subsequent year and then not since. So you have a guy who's having a lot of success on the field, there's no question, both in St. Louis and San Diego, and both tenures have been short. Both have ended abruptly and surprisingly. The one in St. Louis ended very much not on his terms. But again, the piece I wanted to talk about is the media side of this, because I think in a media market the size of St. Louis, which again, San Diego is not some massive market compared to St. Louis. It's not one with tremendously greater media resources. It's not one with a tremendously tougher readership or tougher media. You know, you're not talking about New York or Boston or Philadelphia. We're not talking about Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco. We're not even talking about Seattle or Dallas. We're talking about cities that are maybe not comparable culturally, right? But comparable in the sense of media markets and resources and what kind of coverage they're used to, how adversarial that coverage is or isn't. What grinds my gears is the fact that we had to wait so long for such a tremendously impactful story. Right, this philosophical differences company line we got from the Cardinals dominated conversations for a while and is still a reference point now. It's become a touchstone in Cardinals conversations ever since. And we didn't get this story, which must have been out there. And then what you'll get from people in the know in St. Louis media is like, well, yeah, I knew this. You know, everybody who's in the know knew this already, that people were frustrated with Mike Schilt, that there were people who thought he was difficult to work for, that there were people who thought he went too far, that there were, according to Kevin Acey's story, Cardinals staff members who were going to quit, who were threatening to quit their jobs if Mike Schilt was not fired. And people in the local media will act like, oh, yeah, that was known. Well, why didn't you report it then? Because I'm going to tell you this. As a reporter, and that's a little different. I should probably
paint with a slightly narrower, more specific brush. Because we're really talking about reporters, journalists here. Because media is kind of a catch-all term. And this doesn't apply to talking heads, like, I suppose, for these purposes, myself. Or to random commentators on social media. This applies to serious reporters. The nature of the job, the purpose of the job, why you get paid, is not for what you know. It's like being a coach in that way, right? It's not what you know, it's what the players know. Same thing if you're a reporter. It's not what you know, it's what your readers know. It's what your viewers know. It's what your listeners know. That's what counts. And I don't know what the incentive is to not tell this story. If nobody had this story, how is that possible? How is a guy in San Diego, years after the fact, scooping the entire St. Louis media? If people did have the story, how was it not told? And why? I don't know in this instance. I have some hypotheses. I don't know why that would be, except that we as a city, and by we here, I mean not so much the media, I mean the consumers of media, need to demand more of that. We need to ask for and consume a little more toughness. Nothing extreme, nothing unnecessarily combative, but we need to want and to show we want a little bit more in holding teams accountable. I talked about this a lot in St. Louis City coverage, and I'll probably talk about it a little bit as we wrap up this hour heading toward the city spotlight with Jen Cease in the next hour. This is not so much Jen's bailiwick, but it is mine to talk about the fact that I think St. Louis City are run, I don't want to say ineptly, but are run poorly by people who don't really have a plan. I think this year that's been more obvious than ever. And we don't hold them sufficiently accountable. Certainly not until it's too late. We force you to string together multiple bottom of the Western Conference seasons before we really start to demand something in terms of accountability. And I think that's some of what played out here. So I hope we demand more, because it is totally unacceptable for us to be getting this story years removed and secondhand from San Diego about, hey, a fundamental event, a very significant event, one of the most significant events in the last half decade of Cardinals baseball. You're getting the real story now, finally, from somebody half a country away, years after the fact. It's a hugely important event, provides a lot of context. The one other thing I'll say, and I think people have already mentioned this, it, to me, makes John Mozeliak look really good, because he never said this publicly, and he never leaked it. Or if he did, he couldn't find somebody willing to write it, and I think he could have found somebody willing to write it if he wanted to. This story was never out there, and that says that John Mozeliak was willing to wear this one. And I don't know if that's doing a solid to Mike Schilt. I don't know if it's just what he thought of as the way the Cardinals do their business. Either way, I do think it changes things a little bit, because I think folks put that Mike Schilt firing on John Mozeliak, and it sounds like he might have made the right decision. At the very least, he might not have had much of a decision to make, because he might have been poised to lose a ton of people out of his organization, at least a few, is what we would understand if he had kept Mike Schilt. And it sounds like that environment might have been one where it was not the right decision for him or for any other president of baseball operations to retain Mike Schilt for reasons that weren't readily apparent on the field. Again, folks are going to draw different conclusions from this. Different people are going to have different levels of tolerance for how far is too far. And we don't get specifics, right? Because in these situations, in order to get information that he needs to tell the story, somebody like Kevin Acey or any other good reporter, they can't give you all the details because they have to protect certain people. Because that's how you get the information in the first place. That's how you make it solid enough to run the story. There has to be some vagary left in there around the edges. You can only get so particular. And so we're not going to be able to draw specific conclusions. We're not going to get a video of Mike Schilt doing XYZ to an assistant coach or to a support staff member or saying XYZ in a conversation with AJ Preller, who runs baseball operations for the Padres. We're not going to get those kind of specifics. We're in a world where we're used to all getting to see firsthand what happened, hear firsthand what happened, to make our own opinion. That's not going to happen here, which in some ways means that the breadth of opinions is going to be even wider, because people are going to be filling in some gaps with their own assumptions. I'm not really interested in doing that. I'm not drawing any strong conclusion about Mike Schilt one way or the other off of this. And I think it's been talked around for a couple of days now in St. Louis, and we probably talked it out at this point. But the media, the reporting angle on it is one that I wanted to touch on because I think it's very, very frustrating as someone who cares about and has been engrossed in, for better or worse, the narratives that have been around this team and have been present in this fan base in the Cardinals conversations that we've had in recent years. This is a piece of the story that would have been really nice to know at the time. Could have saved us a lot of trouble in the last couple of years. We could have had this debate back then, and we could have been past it because we would have understood where things came from instead of speculating about what this meant for John Mozeliak, what it meant for ownership, all of that. Because as it turns out, the decision to fire Mike Schilt, I think, had nothing to do with the stuff that we all thought it did. Right? We were. I don't think anybody was speculating that this was why they fired Mike Schilt. So that's all there is really to say about that. But you can feel free to chime in if you want. I think a lot of people probably feel like we're talked out on this, and that is fair enough. We're going to wrap this up. We're going to talk a little bit about Yadier Molina and Albert Pujols and their managerial aspirations next. And then we will finish up with a little bit of St. Louis City and talk to our friend Jen Cease before she takes over for a City Spotlight from 8 to 9 this evening. Graybar Sports Open Line continues on KMOX. Wrapping up our final hour of Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. Nate Gatter back with you. Kyle Sixta running things in our studio. Jen Cease will be with us for our final segment in moments before she takes over for City Spotlight this evening from 8 to 9, getting you set for the final game of the season for St. Louis City. We'll talk about that in just a moment. First, let's finish up Cardinals chat and Cardinals adjacent chat with talking about Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina as managerial candidates. Albert Pujols reportedly has interviewed for at least a couple of jobs. He could be a candidate for the Padres job, but certainly he's been linked to the Angels and potentially to the Orioles as well. So there's some interest. I think it's safe to say that if Albert wants a managerial job in the major leagues badly, he'll probably have one this year. I would think worst case for him is he's managing the Angels. And Yadier Molina then posted on Instagram expressing his interest in coming back to Major League Baseball as a manager, as a coach. These kind of things get people very stirred up in St. Louis because, for better or worse, mostly for better, St. Louis is a loyal place in the way that provincial Midwestern cities tend to be. The downside of this is I'm not sure what evidence we're relying on that Albert Pujols or Yadier Molina would be especially good managers. There's not a lot of evidence to say they wouldn't be, but I personally don't think that hitting 700 home runs indicates you'd be a better manager than the next guy. I don't know that it's necessary to command respect in clubhouses. I think sounds like Mike Schilt commanded plenty of respect in clubhouses. I think Ollie Marmol commands plenty of respect in clubhouses. I think Sean McVay commands plenty of respect in the Los Angeles Rams locker room. I don't think it's necessary to have played at the top level, certainly not to have been a great player at the top level, in order to get that kind of treatment from players, get that respect. The other thing, you know, Albert Pujols' managerial opportunity seems like it's going to happen somewhere. I think people have kind of accepted that, and it's not going to be here this year. And so hopefully that could, you know, if he takes that job with the Angels, or the Orioles, or the Padres, wherever, people can kind of just let that go and not have a fit about it. The bigger thing will be if Yadier Molina goes somewhere else, especially if he follows Albert somewhere for an assistant position, bench coach, whatever. The other concern that I have about Yadier Molina, and I guess it applies to both of them, but I think with Yadier Molina it's more obvious, is that I wonder if, and this is not terribly uncommon for guys who are a couple of years removed from playing, if the desire to be back in the game, to be associated with it, to feel like they're part of it still, is stronger than the desire to actually do the job. Because being a manager, being a coach in Major League Baseball is not just being on the team, right? It's not that being a player is easy either, but it's not just going to be, I get to go to the ballpark again, I get to wear the uniform again, I get to have something, you know, other than being retired going on in my life. I get to feel like I'm a major leaguer again. It's so much more than that. And a lot of it would be things that those guys probably won't like to do. With Kevin Wheeler earlier, we talked about, with Yadier Molina in particular, how would that go with all the media responsibilities? Would he enjoy doing that? We've kind of let it go. We kind of let it go at the time. Yadier Molina, at least for a short period of time, decided he didn't really want to be a player his last year, and he'd rather go off to Puerto Rico and take a little vacation to be an owner of a minor league basketball team. And that was going to be his focus for a few days in the middle of the season. He was playing. The Cardinals paid him several hundreds of thousands of dollars just for the couple of days that he didn't show up to work. What makes us think then that he's going to be ultra dedicated to doing all the details of being an assistant coach? What makes us think that Yadier Molina won't get into the dog days of July and August and say, I have so much money. I absolutely don't need to do this job. How many guys do you know who are multimillionaires, who are worth tens or hundreds of millions, who regularly take orders from other people and just do what other people tell them to do? And when other people say, you've got to show up early and stay late on this Tuesday to do things that I don't want to do, how many of them just say, sir, yes, sir? I'm not saying, I don't know him, right? I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I just think Cardinals fans, and this is probably true of any team anywhere, they hear Yadier Molina, they hear Albert Pujols, and they associate them with all the great feelings that they had when they were players. Those things have, to me, almost nothing to do with evaluating them as coaching or managerial candidates. They have to be able to stand on their own in that regard. And I'm just not seeing what is the evidence. Now, it's got to start somewhere, right? It's kind of a catch-22 of saying, well, he has no experience, he has no coaching or managerial resume. No, he doesn't until he does, right? Somebody's got to be the first one to hire him. It's not going to happen. If Yadier Molina said, I'll go through an entire year as the Memphis Redbirds bench coach, that would go a long way for me, right? If he can ride the bus, fly commercial for a whole year, okay, then I'll believe it. I wouldn't be moving mountains. Certainly, I wouldn't be indicating clearing the path for him right away, because all that's indicating is the same kind of special treatment that I don't think, if he's going to come in, it's going to be a manager, to be a bench coach, to be whatever his role is, not to be Yadier Molina, the bench coach. He's going to be the bench coach. That's it. And he's going to use his skills. He's going to be himself. But it can't be to get some kind of special treatment or to have some kind of different standard or to be treated differently than anybody else, because being Yadier Molina in and of itself, being Albert Pujols in and of itself, is not going to win games. Not the way it did when they were on the field, certainly. All right, quick timeout, and then we'll have Jen Cease get you set for City Spotlight coming up in the next hour. Back in a moment on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Our sports open line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Nate Gatter filling in for Matt Pauly on this Thursday evening. Wrapping up Gray Bar Sports Open Line, but more sports coverage is coming up on KMOX this evening. Jen Cease will have City Spotlight coming up after the news until 9 o'clock. Jen, so good to have you in the studio. It's been too long.
The last time we got to do this, we had much more time than we have tonight.
Yeah, we have almost no time. So I will give the mic to you, which is what people want to hear anyway. What's going on from 8 to 9?
I say, I've already got an hour of soccer. I don't know if people want more than that on Sports Open Line, but we are going to cover, I want to spend a lot of time in that first segment hearing from David Critchley. I think Critch has made a really good case for him to be considered as a head coach. So we're going to hear some clips from him from earlier this week. Dale Schilling will come along to do some analysis. We'll hear Marcel Hartl's player profile. Great stuff there. And then we'll wrap it up with play-by-play voice Joey Zanaboni.
So I am not going to get too deep down the road right now because we just don't have time of the situation City have put themselves in by hiring Olaf Melberg, who apparently just lied to them in the interview, then firing him very quickly, which they kind of had to do, and then waiting a while and firing Lutz Fanensteel months later. But at minimum, I would have to think it's put David Critchley kind of in the driver's seat to get this job, because they've played better, right? They've won three of their last four. Things are not bad right now, certainly not as bad as they've been. And they kind of have a lot in flux. It wouldn't be the worst thing to have a little continuity.
A little continuity. And the players are also speaking about it. You'll hear in Hartl's interview that he simply says we're playing for the coach and he thinks the coach should keep the job.
And you'd think that people are paying attention to that.
Right.
That moves the needle at a certain point.
He's going to be back, and Marcel's considered a leader. So, I mean, granted, the players don't get to make the choices, but I would think some level of continuity somewhere for City can't hurt.
You would think. At this point, what could hurt after the last couple of years? Might as well try something. Jen Cease will have City Spotlight coming up after the news. We are looking forward to hearing
all of that. That'll do it for us this evening on Graybar Sports Open Line. We so appreciate all of our guests. Kevin Acey of the San Diego Union-Tribune with the Mike Schilt story. Patrick Doherty of NFL on NBC. Earl Austin Jr., our KMOX St. Louis men's basketball analyst. And Stu Durando, who covers the Billikens for his Stu on SLU Substack. All of them, my producer Kyle Sixta, Nate Gatter saying so long this evening. City Spotlight coming up on the other side on KMOX.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.